Kicking off the day with those feel-good vibes, you're tuned in to the Morning Jukebox with DJ Raph the Mac. Good morning, Gitmo. I am DJ Raph the Mac, aka Petty Officer Raphael McCory, and we've got a special guest for you. We haven't had them in a good hot minute, but we've got our hospital team over, and you know, I'm not going to steal any thunder because I heard they have a new name for this hour. But first off, how are you guys doing?
We're good. Happy Friday.
It's Friday. That's right.
Doing fantastic. I'm happy to be here.
So we got the hospital crew back here. So it's myself again, Andy McDermott, and then we have Chris Johnson, who is our family nurse practitioner over at the hospital. So he is now officially, it's been being coined today, if it has not already been officially stated, taking over as co-host of the hospital's radio show, which we have now recoined The Pulse.
Boom, boom.
You like it?
I like it.
I like that.
It's great.
The pulse there. Good. It took me a second. I thought it was like a drum roll.
But I know.
It was almost, in my head.
It was almost slightly Law and Order, but, you know, with a little bit of a twist.
Let's
you
keep
know.
Law and Order out of the hospital.
Dum, dum.
Dum, dum. Got it.
For a good reason.
But there we go. The Pulse. Yeah. So we're back. And now we're starting to get into our battle rhythm at the hospital. A lot of changes have happened recently. Just a lot of staff turning over. Perfect opportunity for us to get back on the radio show, hoping, you know, at least every other week. And then, you know, even more if we have more material. There's always material out there.
Absolutely.
So much to talk about with health.
So much. So much.
Layers. Layers and layers.
Do we have anything to talk about today?
Actually, we're going to talk about skin layers. We're going to talk about sun exposure, suntan lotion. Is it real? Do we need it?
Is it? Are we going to fact check that one? Mythbusters?
I'm just saying, is it Big Pharma? Is it Big Pharma trying to get in
it's
stock
not,
shelves
not, wait, we can't do
with
brand,
extra
we can't
lotion?
Do brand. No brand names on the radio, but but is it Big Pharma sunscreen trying to dip their hands in the American pocket?
Yeah.
We'll see. We got lots of data for it. And then we got some other stuff going on in the hospital. So right now, so actually, Chris Johnson, for those that don't know, he is also our director for public health. So he wears a lot of different hats. And much like me, those hats have not prevented hair loss, but we look good with shiny scalps. But he's got the some information to pass on influenza efforts going on today and this weekend, really. So what's going on with flu shots?
We do. So we're coming into the final parts of our mass vaccination evolutions that we've been doing. So we've been doing these evolutions going around the base over the past month. We've vaccinated somewhere close to 2,000 or so far, so quite a few people. But today and tomorrow is going to be our actual big push. So between 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. today and tomorrow over at the Windjammer, we're going to be doing mass vaccinations. That mass vaccinations for Friday today is going to be active duty as priority, but that doesn't mean that anybody can't come by and get their vaccinations done. And we're going to be doing it again tomorrow. Those won't be the last opportunities that we're going to be doing it. We're also going to be doing it at the health fair, which we'll talk about as well.
Now, just so that I'm tracking, you said active duty is the priority, but we've gotten a lot of active duty already through other endeavors, but my kids need flu shots, so you're going to get three screaming kids that are required to have a flu shot, I believe, by November timeframe. I think it's the end of November. Are you guys taking care of kids?
We are
as well?
All set to take it. So the age range as far as vaccinations go, right, if they're older than 6 months, they can come by and get their vaccination.
Okay, perfect. And what do we need to bring, right? So I'm a parent, and what do I need to bring to validate that my child is my child?
So, yeah, really the most important thing is some form of ID card that we can utilize with that. The other part is if you have not been seen at the hospital in the past year, we want you to preferably swing by the hospital first, get registered with the patient administration. That will smooth the process of you coming through because this year, the evolution, we are using our electronic health system as far as kind of how we're documenting and profiling that coming through. And if you already have been registered, then that definitely speeds up the process as far as you getting through. That being said, if for some reason you just couldn't make it over to the hospital, you're rushing, you're trying to get everything done in the day, if you stop by the Windjammer, we still can get you registered there. Just going to be a little bit smaller number of people that we can process at one time going through that route.
All right. So if you have not registered, please do register. It makes things so much easier. As soon as you walk in the main entrance of the hospital, that first door on your right is where you're going. First door on your right, they'll say medical records, patient administration, but they'll be able to get you squared away. And it really does speed up processes. And if you're on this island, you need to be registered with the hospital. So if you haven't done that yet, no time like Friday morning, Friday afternoon to go ahead and get that done. So, all right. So bring some form of ID for, what about my six-year-old who doesn't have an ID? What do I bring for that kid?
So something that helps us to register or recognize that they are who you say they are.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
You know, if you show up with Bugs Bunny, we're going to kind of double check to make sure that
okay.
it is who you say it is.
Well, we'll be good on that front. Okay. So good. So influenza today, tomorrow, show up, get vaccinated. Our installation has actually done really well in the past few years getting vaccinated.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of talk about flu and COVID vaccinations going on. And you know, have we had mass outbreaks of flu in some time? And the answer is we haven't. But I would also argue that, you know, flu is dangerous. And even on this installation with our limited medical stuff, it's a good opportunity for folks to get vaccinated and keep us in a good position where you're unlikely to have, you know, major complications from influenza. So, yeah, highly recommended.
And I always reference back to say that even if you think you're the type that's not, oh, well, the flu's not going to put me in the hospital. If you've actually had the flu, if you legitimately have had the flu, you never want to have it again. It feels terrible.
It's the worst.
And that flu vaccination, even if you were still to get the flu, most often you have much milder symptoms. And to me, that makes it worth it just alone. Having had the flu before, I don't want to have it again.
So as you see, Chris Johnson picked out the first song, which was very sun-themed. So I think we'll probably roll into some other sun-themed songs as we talk about sunscreen and the health fair moving forward.
All right. Well, stay tuned. More information to come. All right. Well, we are back with The Pulse.
With The Pulse.
Boom, boom.
Okay. We were waiting for it.
Yes.
You were on playing on your phone. So before we get into talking about skincare like sunscreen and preventing sunburn and sun damage, let's take a minute and let's talk about the health fair that's coming out. That tends to be a big event where the hospital gets some representation and can really do some preventative advice, counseling, et cetera, for folks on the installation and just make sure we keep Gitmo healthy and well. So tell us a little bit about the health fair, when's it happening, who's invited, and what type of stuff are we doing?
All right, so I'll tell you about the health fair. It's going to be November 2nd from 10 to 1300. Again, that's November 2nd, 11 to 1300, over at the next atrium. The theme is going to be superhero, super health, and we've got a whole host of people that's going to be there. We've got the Red Cross doing blood pressure screenings.
Are you dressing up? Superhero?
Superhero.
Are you dressing up?
You have to.
Oh, I've got the perfect costume.
I mean, you
kind of
have to now. I just put it out.
So it's not really a costume because I low-key am actually a superhero, but...
See, I was wondering. I thought that's a costume competition you were wearing just every day. But
that's why I usually wear the glasses to throw people off.
So you're the modern day Clark Kent is what you're telling me.
Yeah. I'm kind of like, yeah, like a mini Clark Kent.
Right.
Like a shorter, stubbier version of Clark Kent.
Balder.
Balder. Yeah.
Clark Kent.
Yeah. He's faster than the speed of light. I am slower than the speed of light.
That's why our crime rate is so low on Gitmo is because of your superhero.
This is my mediocre response time.
Now you had a message you were passing before.
I did. So superhero, super health. Blood pressure screening is going to be done by the Red Cross. We've got a whole bunch of folks coming from the hospital, primary care doing tobacco cessations and diabetes education. We've got physical therapy, optometry, preventative medicine, OBGYN, and many more. And if the OBGYN didn't entice you to want to come out, there's also going to be trucks, ambulances, bouncy houses, and health smoothie samples.
Oh, who's making the health smoothie samples?
It's a secret.
Oh, is it you? Is it our superhero?
That may or may not be my superhero power.
Look,
is super
the fact
health
that
smoothies.
We were both interested in the smoothies.
I know, that's why I saved it for the last part, right?
I said smoothie.
I mean, I could tell people were really excited about their blood pressure screening, but when they heard health smoothies now. Now
sounds very calming. Maybe
now I'm very
intrigued.
Magnesium
in there.
Right, probably going to, probably some greens, probably some fiber.
Mm.
Some legal greens.
Yeah. See how I'm slowly taking down the excitement of the health smoothie.
I see. Yeah,
I'm
going to
bring it back up there. It's going to be delicious.
That's okay. At the end, just say right. Smoothie and then we're working.
Smoothie.
So this health fair is important as we try to provide some outreach for the installation. I think for a lot of folks, there's an education piece where we can talk about, hey, at this age and, you know, unique to your specific, you know, medical profile, what should you be getting done? Mm. So what sort of screening should be happening, whether it be for, we talked about diabetes, but what other screenings would we recommend for colorectal cancer screening, breast cancer screening, things to that effect. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? And for some folks, because those processes are not super simple here on the installation, and we don't do all the screenings locally here, we can at least give some advice on how it would affect you if you're a contractor, how would it affect you if you're a GS employee, active duty, foreign national. We can really tailor what those recommendations are for how you would get that health care. The recommendation is not going to change for who you are based off of, you know, contractor versus active duty, but how you get that care may potentially change, and we can give some guidance on that as well.
That's pretty awesome.
So lots of good information. Just because you're here in Gitmo and we do have limited medical resources doesn't mean we have none, and it doesn't mean we can't give you the good advice on what you should be getting done just to maintain your health.
Absolutely.
So one more time, pencils ready. That's November 2nd, 11 to 1300 at the next atrium.
With smoothies.
With smoothies. Smoothies.
That's what I took away from this whole message.
November 2nd, come for smoothies.
So after this next commercial break, I think that'll give us a good opportunity to jump into sunscreen. Does it work? Does it not? Should you get it? If so, which type should you be using? Should we be using, you know, there's a physical sunscreen versus kind of more of a chemical based one? And I guess is it all myth? And we'll kind of do some fact checking and talk about what we know. Because sun, we're close to it based off of where we're located geographically. So it's a big deal. And anyone who's had a good sunburn, it's good to know whether it makes a difference one way or another, minus the misery of the sunburn.
So. Absolutely. So some great information to get into. Stay tuned. All right. We're getting into some sunscreen and some questions and answers that I didn't know that I needed to ask.
Yeah. Well, I think generally speaking, we always hear, you know, apply sunscreen, reapply sunscreen. And anyone who's been out here for more than, you know, a week or two will realize that it's pretty easy to get a sunburn most times of the day. So we thought it'd be a good idea just to talk about sunscreen, talk about what we know, what should you be doing, what should you not be doing, and, you know, how much of that is actually factual in terms of sunscreen use. So just a couple things. The stuff that we'll talk about is what's supported either through some studies that were done, or what's being recommended by some of the major recommending dermatology bodies. So there's like the American Academy of Dermatology. We'll be talking off of their recommendations. So I'm actually going to go straight to the family nurse practitioner, who is probably everybody on the installation's primary care manager anyway. he's mine. So did you know you're my primary care manager?
I did. I've been meaning to talk to you about that. Okay. You're kind of due for a health check.
Yes, I am. But we'll talk about that later. So what do you tell your patients in terms of, like, okay, they come to you and they say, hey, we're going out to the beach this weekend. We plan on being out there for 4 hours. What should we do for sunscreen? What do you tell them?
Yeah, so the first part, right, is right. Myth bust number one is who needs sunscreen. And I'll hear this all the time. Oh, I never get sunburned. It's not a problem for me. Well, sure, you may not come out looking like a lobster like I do if I'm out in the sun for any given time at all. But that does not mean that you're not getting those damaging effects from the sun rays. So myth bust number one is that actually everybody should be wearing sunscreen, right? That sunscreen should be at least an SPF of 30 or higher. And what they say as far as an amount that you should be putting on to essentially cover head to toe is about a shot glass worth. So about an ounce to an ounce and a half or so of sunscreen. And then the bigger part, right? So even out of those ones that typically do put on their sunscreen, are you reapplying that? And they recommend that you reapply that about every 2 hours, give or take how active you are, how sweaty you are. So if you're a hot, sweaty mess, you probably need to put it on a little bit more often. If you barely glisten, right, then maybe a little bit less than that 2 hours, right? But maybe a little bit more than that 2 hours.
Glisten.
You know, if you just have a slight sparkle to your skin,
okay,
then maybe that will last you a little bit longer. But in the heat, humidity environment that is here, and especially with the damaging rays that we get, particularly because of our proximity, I would say that if you're going past that 2 hours, you are probably getting sunburned.
So I heard a shot every 2 hours of sunscreen topically, not orally.
Topically.
Topically.
Yep. As meaning applied to the skin.
Got it.
Put it on the skin.
You made an interesting point, at least SPF 30. Mm-hmm. Right, and if you go to the next right now, you'll see a whole bunch of 50 on the shelf. So is there any difference between 30 and 50?
Yeah, and that's a common thing, right? Is more actually more, right? And so the basis of how they come up with SBF is basically an indication to say how long theoretically would that last. And so in theory, you would think that, okay, if I put on SPF 1000, I'm going to be so much more protected. And when we look at the evidence as far as what it shows, we know that at least SPF of 30 or higher definitely is what we're kind of targeting to say that it's kind of helpful. If you go to SPF 100, is it much more helpful? Well, maybe not in the sense if we're reapplying that every 2 hours, but where we might find some saving grace in that is that if we're not reapplying it every 2 hours like we really should be, and that really is the hallmark, is that you put it on and you keep putting it on. That's what's going to be really actually helpful, preventful. So if you got SPF 100 and you only put it on once and you were out for 8 hours, that is not going to be as protective as if you put on SPF 30 and we're reapplying it every 2 hours.
And I did a little bit of reading because, you know, for our kids, we always buy the SPF 50 because we're like, okay, we don't want to burn their skin like we had ours burn when we were young. So we'll give them like the SPF 50. But really, SPF 30 blocks 97% of the rays that are damaging. Wow. So that's a big chunk, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what you mentioned is really the key is the reapplication piece, because every time since I've been out here that I get sunburn, it's almost reliably I did not reapply the way I'm supposed to. And you and I have a very similar complexion of pale and
we, vampire.
We get lobstery very quickly.
Yeah.
So it's happened quite a few times, and it's almost always due to reapplication. The other thing that I encourage a lot of folks to look at is expiration dates on sunscreen. So, 'cause some folks will throw it in their beach bag and then they forget about it and it just sits there. And then here it is 2 years later. If you stay on the island for 2 years, apologies ahead of time if you do. But if you stay on island for that long and it's expired, and we've actually seen that even expired sunscreen actually does lose its effectiveness over time. So making sure you kind of check that every once in a while to make sure you're not using stuff from, you know, it expired in 21 or 22. Because it's still out there.
Yeah. And some things to kind of tie into that, right? So when you're purchasing your sunscreen, look to see if it says kind of more or less when it was manufactured. Some will have that on there. They recommend that from the time that it's brand new, it may have a shelf life of about 3 years, depending on how it was stored and stuff like that. Again, if you're putting that sunscreen on and you notice that it's not really spreading like what you typically know sunscreen to spread, right? If it's kind of chalky and chunky and watered out and stuff like that, then you're probably not getting the protection that you need.
Okay, I've got actually I got two questions.
Let's
for
do
you.
This. Yeah, let's go off script.
Off script a little bit, because I think it was really, really good that you mentioned complexion and not to go there, but my complexion is a lot darker and tanner, and so there's a lot of, I think, myth that people of my complexion or darker don't necessarily need to utilize the sunscreen. And so just to make sure that that's not the case.
You're correct. So it's not the case, and really, the damaging rays of the sun do not discriminate. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be less prone to burn, mm-hmm. as you mentioned previously, which is just miserable for anyone. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're immune to skin cancers, right? Because really, what we're getting at is why do we put on sunscreen? And it's so we don't get sunburn, because sunburn is miserable. And then secondarily, you know, we're trying to prevent skin cancers.
Absolutely.
And I think when we come back from commercial break, we'll talk about three major skin cancers and what the science says specifically about sunscreen and those skin cancers. But yeah, complexion doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, those rays don't discriminate one bit. So everybody can have sun damage in some way. They may not. There may be some protective, mm-hmm. deeper complexions can have a little bit more protective qualities just with the melanin,
mm-hmm.
But it doesn't, there's no immunity to damage.
Right.
Okay, so it'll catch up with you.
Right, yeah, exactly. Those damaging rays are still causing those effects to those skin cells on many different layers. And that effect, right, particularly may not necessarily really show until years or decades later, but that damage was still there and still happened.
That was your first question.
That was my first question. The second one, because I was listening to you about the SPF 30 versus 50 versus 100. And so just to make sure I have an understanding, and maybe those who are listening, it sounds like the higher SPFs are maybe for consideration if you're doing something that you know you necessarily wouldn't be, that you're not, for whatever reason, going to be able to reapply every 2 hours per se. Is that sort of a better understanding of that? In the sense, like, not to say that I wouldn't reapply it, but maybe if I know that I need 3 to 4 hours before I'm free to reapply it again, is that what that would be better
towards? Yeah, and again, if you're noticing that I'm kind of tiptoeing on that aspect of it, it's because, it may buy you just a little bit more. But really, it's going to be that reapplication. That's the part that I really want to kind of drive down is that it's putting it back on again. Does paying an extra, maybe $20 or something or whatever it is, just depending, right? Sometimes they really will increase the price for those higher SPFs because particularly they know that if it's somebody like me who has the complexion of, a piece of paper, I'm going for the biggest, strongest stuff that I can for it. And so, so there is some evidence that says that it may help buy a little bit more time, but I would go on further to say that it's not buying you so much more time, that it's that you can kind of live freely and not have to worry about it just because you got a higher SPF.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I had a full grasp and understanding of
that.
Got it.
I like that we had a good evaluation in the middle of our radio show to do a check back, as we like to call it. It worked.
All right. Well, stay tuned because we've got a lot more information. We'll be getting into the skin cancers next and what we're trying to prevent. All right. We are back. You know, so much information about something that's very important because we're always, always, always under the sun here. Regardless of what day, what time it is, it's always hot and the sun is always blazing. So it's a lot of good information to get into. So what are we avoiding now? What is the point of all of this?
Yeah, let's talk about skin cancers for a second. And generally speaking, this is not an all-inclusive list. So for all the medical enthusiasts out there that are going to be fact-checking me and telling me I don't know anything, which is not fully inaccurate, we're going to talk about the three major skin cancers that we tend to really try to prevent with sunscreen and reducing sun exposure. So basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and then the one that we all get really worried about, melanoma, malignant melanoma. So the way I kind of break these down for folks is all of them have a relationship to damage to the skin, which inherently the sun can be damaging to the skin. So all of them are related to it. The most common skin cancer is basal cell.
Okay.
And for a lot of folks, so we keep going back to myself and Chris Johnson, we both have bald heads and, a common place for basal cell carcinomas are in very high sun exposure areas. Mm. So the face, in our case, our scalps. Mm-hmm. Scalp burn is one of the most miserable things ever. I don't recommend 0 stars on Yelp, but it's common and more common the older you get, honestly, because of the cumulative sun exposure. So that's typically how we see basal cell. The good news about basal cell is when you catch it, it's actually a curable cancer, which usually you just have to destroy the skin that's affected by it, and you've cured it.
Okay.
But you can reduce it by reducing damage from the sun. Okay. So that's basal cell. It is cancer. And, there's never a good way to put this, but what I tell folks when I have diagnosed a basal cell is if there's ever a cancer that you can be diagnosed with for your skin, like this is it. Like, not that anyone's signing up for it, but if you had to, this would be the one you would want to sign up for.
Best possible outcome.
Because you can treat it, okay, very easily. Typically very easily. Then you kind of step it up a little bit to squamous cell carcinoma. That tends to be a little bit tougher to treat. Still curable, by the way.
Okay.
Curable. Actually, all three of them are curable, but not as easily curable. But the squamous cell tends to be a little bit tougher. Usually have to take a bigger chunk of skin out, so you usually leave that one with a pretty good scar. But again, that one is absolutely related to sun damage and skin damage. And then the last one, which we in the medical field really get worried about, all of them we're worried about, but this one is the most worrisome, is melanoma. And melanoma is just nasty. Let's just say that is one of the nastiest cancers that we have to diagnose, treat, manage, etc., because it doesn't play nice. So you could be diagnosed with a melanoma anywhere on the body, and you don't know a lot of times until it's in different areas. Okay? So it can spread easily, and you think you can cure melanoma, which we do have. It can be cured based off of the specific treatment, but that's a pretty. It can be a pretty rough treatment, but it's always on your radar for recurrence. So we get worried about it. We think that there's a large genetic component to it. so that if there's damage in or some gene in your DNA that says that you're prone to getting melanoma, you know, it's just, it's likely to come back for some folks. Not all, but melanoma is the nastiest one. And, you know, I'm looking over at Chris right now. Whenever we do our medical histories of patients and they tell us that they have a history of melanoma, that's a red flag that we want to make sure that we're a little bit more aggressive with our surveillance. So, and I'll turn this over to Chris for a second. So a patient comes in and they tell you they have a history of melanoma. What type of stuff do you recommend for surveillance for them? Like, hey, you come into the doctor, do you need to see anyone in particular? And what type of exam stuff do you, you know, recommend to them just for surveillance of skin cancers and specifically melanomas?
Yeah, so I think some of those aspects that you're kind of hitting on there, right? So the biggest thing when we're talking about any of these forms of skin cancers is the earlier the detection, the better that it is with it, which is why we kind of really want to foot stomp that part. So not just in the emphasis of putting on sunscreen daily and having that protective factors, but doing those skin checks regularly, looking at those different moles and freckles and things like that that you have, and looking to see if they're starting to show any signs of changes. And to be honest, in my own practice, that's usually where I kind of emphasize it, because we can get into kind of talking about these characteristics of what to look for, which might be more indicative of a basal cell carcinoma or a squamous cell carcinoma, or this looks a little bit more like melanoma. But the takeaway that I kind of want to have with my patients is, if you, that freckle that's always looked like that freckle isn't looking like that freckle anymore, time to come in and let an expert take a look at it and see, and let us help kind of be the decision makers and work with you on that to decide, yeah, that looks like something that we probably need to maybe biopsy or test, or at least give the reassurance to say that, you know what, that freckle still looks like an okay freckle. We're okay with that one.
We have an acronym we use. It's not clever at all, but it's ABCDE we're going over, you know, concerning skin lesions when they come in, because it's a fairly common complaint that we get. Hey, I have this spot. I don't remember seeing it 5 years ago. That this is common. And, you know, folks, we encourage that because it gives us an opportunity, as Chris said, to intervene earlier. But A stands for asymmetric. So if, you know, it's not a nice circle of a spot, that can tend to be a little bit concerning. B stands for borders. So if it has like jaggedy, raggedy borders as opposed to smooth circular borders, that can be concerning as well. C stands for color. So if you have something, you know, when we talk about melanomas, most people think that it's a very dark black spot, and that's probably true for melanomas. They tend to be very dark. There is still, this is where it gets a little nerdy, there's about 10% of melanomas that are considered amelanotic melanomas, so they actually appear skin colored or even lighter colored. That's why it's a tricky cancer. But D stands for diameter, so typical recommendation is if it's bigger than a pencil eraser. If you think about the old yellow pencils that we have to buy for our kids, they get sold out at the next. Sorry, no plug there. and then E is probably the most concerning one that Chris alluded to, which is evolution. So is it changing over time? So if 3 years ago it was, you know, a pinpoint, and now it's the size of a nickel, that is changing, that's evolving, and that's something that's one of the more concerning features that I would say, if that's you, you want to get that evaluated. And then we have to have a discussion of, you know, does it look okay, or do we want to biopsy it? And biopsy is a fancy term for taking a chunk of that concerning lesion or the whole thing and sending that off to a lab back in the States to tell us if there's anything concerning under a microscope, where we need to take all of it or get a bigger chunk based off of what we find. But that's kind of skin cancer in a nutshell. I think it's your little 5-minute tutorial. Did we cover that?
Yeah, I think so. The only part, I guess, that I would add on before we kind of segue away from that is, don't just check the obvious skin areas, right? We do know that those areas where they're more exposed to sun, we're more likely to see some of those skin changes. But I want to emphasize, check between your toes, look across your ears. So often the times that patients will come in is actually not something that they saw. It's something that their partner saw and noticed was different for them. So it's in one of those areas that they just don't normally look at, don't normally see. So I would drive that part home, is to make sure you're really looking across the whole skin area.
And that's actually, I think, Bob Marley had melanoma underneath a toenail.
Yep.
Oh,
wow. If I'm not mistaken. So that was, again, it's one of those spots that you wouldn't think, but certainly can happen there. And then, you know, the burning question before we go into the break is, does sunscreen prevent skin cancer? And I think the real answer is yes, it does. But in terms of the nerdy data that's out there where people have actually studied this, there's no, so definitely squamous cell carcinoma. We got a proof and link to that. Most likely basal cell, okay, because that is a sun damage type of skin cancer. Although the data doesn't 100% support it. It doesn't say it doesn't, by the way. I'm not advising against sunscreen. But then the third one, melanoma, because there's a large genetic component, it's a little bit less linked. But we certainly know that damage to the skin leads you to a higher risk of skin cancers. So by preventing that damage, hypothetically, that's going to lead it. So highly recommend, especially here while you're out here, lather early and often. One shot every 2 hours, topically, of 30 or higher.
30 or higher.
That's like the summary.
UVA, UVB.
Yes. Protected. UVA, UVB. And that's going to cover the real nasty damaging rays that come through.
Absolutely. Well, don't go anywhere because we'll be finishing off on some great information to wrap this up. All right. Well, we are back.
Yeah, I just had to show off my romantic side on that one. That was a song dedicated to my wife, Lexi, who just turned 29.
Aww.
Yep, 29. I got in trouble for actually saying her age the other day, so I won't say what it really is. But she doesn't look a day over 21. But happy birthday, and it was Wednesday, and maybe that song is an indication of the weekend. But moving forward, just we chatted with sunscreen, and we chatted about prevention of skin cancers. Wanted to tap real quick just on like a daily facial lotion sunscreen for adults because, you know, Chris made a good point during the break. In our younger years, we tend to not apply sunscreen real well, get those burns, get tan, etc. And then we start seeing the repercussions of it in our later 30s, 40s, and so forth. And then we're like, how could I prevent it? But a daily sunscreen on the face is probably a good thing. So same thing, you know, preferably a 30, but even if you're putting on like a 25 or a 20, as a daily facial lotion, like as part of your morning routine, that's probably going to have some benefit and probably going to keep your skin looking younger, less wrinkly, less sunspots over the years. But I think really a transition point is let's talk about sunscreen's great. You don't absolutely need sunscreen. There's other ways to prevent sun damage, which would be shading. So tell us a little bit about some things that we and parents can do to protect ourselves from the sun.
Yeah. So again, really, we're talking about this as kind of any time that you're going to be out in the sun that you should be do it. But between the hours of 10 and 2, we know that those are the time spans that are kind of the most impactful as far as those UV rays. So wearing that ball cap or that wide-brimmed hat, having sunglasses on, so don't forget that sun also hits your eyes as well, and we want to take care of our eyes, prevent things like something called tergiums from forming. And then clothing, like so longer clothing, they make some really good clothing out there now that still breathes well, but still provides that protection. And a lot of times they'll even stamp it right on there as far as what kind of protective value that shirt or pants are giving you. And one kind of piece that I'll pull into that really fast is to talk about is to say that I see sometimes we do a really good job about, you know, the baby's got the sun beanie hat on, they've got the little glasses, they've got the clothing on to kind of keep them covered and everything like that. The other important thing throughout all this is making sure you're staying well hydrated as well. So wearing that sun protective clothing, staying hydrated as well, all really important things. And again, particularly all day, but if you're in that 10 to 2 time span, you know, just know that you're getting those damaging rays at a much higher volume.
We should probably do a show on heat injuries at some point too, now that I just thought about that and hydrating, because that hydrating with water and Gatorade.
Yeah,
specifically. But what else did we want to cover before we get the boot?
Yeah, and this last aspect of it, right? What do we do now? So we talked about how to prevent it, but what do you do that you actually have the sun exposure? And there's a lot of myths out there as far as what you should do. First off, the most important thing is get out of the environment that's causing the sunburns, right? So if you already are sunburned and you're still hanging out anyways, it's time to get some of that clothing on, get out of that sun, find shade. But afterwards, once you get down there, some cooler water showers just to try to kind of help soothe some of that burn, get some of that heat off with it. We actually don't recommend about putting oils or butter or any of those type of things that kind of used to be kind of commonplace sayings that might have gotten passed down from generation to generation. Really something like an aloe or an after sun lotion is what you want to be applying on there. Some will even kind of do a hack and they'll kind of put it in the fridge or something like that just to make it a little bit cooler.
Oh, that's clever.
Now I would caution to say, make it cooler, don't make it cold, right? We don't actually want to put ice packs or anything like that, nor do we want to take that sun after sun lotion that we put in the fridge. It's actually now borderline freezing. We don't want to do that, right? So we don't want to add to the injury of the skin in doing so. And then reapplying that after sun lotion as well is really important. Try to keep that skin as soft and moisturized as you can, again, using one of those products we just mentioned. And some things that can also potentially help, taking something like an ibuprofen can help with the inflammation afterwards. When you're doing your skincare and stuff like that, you want to pat the skin dry, don't rub it, right? That kind of disrupts some of the skin layers and it's more prone to causing a blistering or separation from it to happen. And then last little piece I'll kind of segment is that blistering part of it. So if you're having those blisters, right, the instinct is to want to pop them, but what you're doing is you're exposing very raw skin underneath that has no protective value to it, and you open up that potential for infection because bacteria is always a thing that exists in the environment.
Well, a burn is a burn is a burn, whether it's sunburn or, you know, it's playing in the oven or whatever the case may be. So blistering is a result of a burn. So that ibuprofen or, you know, old school was aspirin we would use for that one. Please don't use aspirin for kids. But aspirin or ibuprofen after you've gotten a burn has been shown actually to reduce risk of blistering. So if you got a really nasty one, you want to take ibuprofen as prescribed. That can reduce that. But yeah, absolutely. If you have those blisters, don't pop them on your own. If they pop, you know, nothing you can do, but keep that clean with a nice gentle soap, and that'll reduce risk of infection, because that's a big risk in any burn patient, including sunburn, is that secondary risk for infection once those blisters have popped. So definitely something to keep in mind.
Well, I want to thank you guys for, I hate to cut you guys short. It's so much great information.
He's about to gong us.
But it's so much great information, and super glad to have you guys once again with us. The Pulse, what an awesome name.
Bum, bum.
Well, hopefully we look forward to hopefully having you guys in the near future. Hopefully you guys learned a lot, because I certainly did. And we will be calling it a wrap.
Thank you again.
Thank you.